Hanley had a happy, comfortable childhood in Maine. Hanley went to college, she earned a degree, and then she began working with children in North Carolina. She quickly discovered that many of the children she was working with spoke Spanish and not English. Hanley applied to graduate school and was accepted, but before starting graduate school, in order to work on her Spanish skills, she decided to move to Guatemala for a period of time. She spent some time there, and Hanley was preparing to return to the United States when a friend of hers said, "I've got to take you into Guatemala City and show you something." This friend took Hanley into Guatemala City, a city with a population of 8 million that swells to 11 million every day as people commute into the city. And this friend showed Hanley a garbage dump. From a distance, Hanley saw what looked like mountains and mountains of garbage. But as she got closer, she began to see that there were people moving around in the garbage dump. And as she got even closer, she saw that there were people living in the garbage dump. People who had taken sheet metal and plywood and planks of board and built little lean-to houses, families, with fathers and mothers and children. These families would scavenge for trash that they could recycle or sell to make a few dollars a day. When Hanley saw this, she was horrified. Her first thought was, "I've got to get away from here. I've got to escape this." Hanley's second thought was, "These precious children have been broken, alienated, cast aside with no hope. I've got to do something. I've got to do something." Hanley thought. The Bible is filled with stories of people who've been broken and alienated and cast aside. The Bible tells stories of people killing one another and enslaving one another and abusing one another. So much of human history is a story of darkness and despair and suffering. And in the midst of this, God said, "I've got to do something. I've got to do something." And God came into the world in the person of Jesus. At first, for Jesus, everything was going great. He healed the sick. He offered hope to the hopeless. He fed the hungry. He taught his followers to love instead of hate, to offer forgiveness instead of seeking retribution. Jesus gathered a sort of cohort, his disciples around him, to help share this message. And before long, his message caught on, and the crowds began to follow him everywhere. At one point, Jesus fed 5,000 people with just 5 loaves and 2 fishes. At another point, he stood on the edge of a mountain or a hill, and he proclaimed a beautiful sermon as thousands listened on. In today's lingo, you could say Jesus was a sort of rock star. And Jesus didn't do it on his own, as I said. He called followers and friends, people to help share this message of love and hope. There was joy, there was goodness, something miraculous was happening. 2,000 years later, in this Guatemala City garbage dump, a similar story took place. After seeing this dump, Hanley couldn't simply walk away. So she called her parents and she told them to sell her car and her computer and send her whatever money they could get because she needed it for something. Hanley went to a nearby church with an unused parish hall, and she swept out the trash and chased out the rats. And then she went to these families on the garbage dump with a plan to help their children get out of the dump. Hanley started an after-school program in this abandoned, unused parish hall. On the first day, 40 children showed up. And each day thereafter, more and more good things began to happen. Hanley began to feed these hungry children. She provided an education for those who were eager to learn. She was giving hope to the hopeless. She was showing love to those who felt forgotten. Hanley also didn't do it alone. She began to call friends and followers to help her share this message of love and hope in this garbage dump. A community began to gather around her. People began to send in donations from as far away as Maine, where she had grown up. A nonprofit was born called Safe Passage, or in Spanish, Camino Seguro. As a teenager, I spent a summer working with Camino Seguro. By that time, they had built a beautiful building where I worked in after-school classes with some of these young children. As you certainly know, today is Mother's Day. It's a day when we celebrate the mothers in our lives and those who've played a maternal role for each of us. Although Hanley didn't have any children of her own, she became like a mother to hundreds of children living on this garbage dump. She helped them learn and grow and know that they were loved. In the middle of this city of 8 million people, on the edge of this garbage dump, there was so much goodness. There was so much hope that was blooming. That's the way it was for the followers of Jesus. There was so much hope, so much goodness that was beginning to appear. When Jesus entered Jerusalem a few days before Passover, it was clear that something powerful was taking place as the crowds cheered and celebrated the arrival of Jesus. And then, in an instant, everything changed. With a kiss, Judas betrayed Jesus. Tried by a stacked jury, sentenced to death, hung on the cross, Jesus died. In 1 week, he went from being God's chosen one, a sort of rock star, to an executed criminal. Can you imagine the devastation of the disciples? Think about what it would have been like to have been one of those closest to Jesus. Every dream shattered, hope gone, no ability to envision a future. Those closest to Jesus must have experienced such profound pain. And this was probably exacerbated by the fact that one of their closest friends, a man who'd lived with them for years, Judas, he was the one who had betrayed Jesus. They must have been left reeling. Could they ever learn to trust again? If you were in their shoes, would you ever be able to be vulnerable again? Much like the Jesus movement 2,000 years ago, Hanley's passion, Safe Passage in Guatemala City, was growing and thriving. And then, in an instant, everything changed. Hanley was in a car in Guatemala City, in the passenger seat, when the brakes on a bus failed. This bus swerved into oncoming traffic and hit Hanley's car, and Hanley was killed. By this point, hundreds of volunteers were involved with the program Safe Passage. There were dozens of teachers and staff working in Guatemala City with these children, and the families living on the garbage dump were finding hope. So in the wake of her death, what would happen to Hanley's dream? Would the dream die also? I suspect that we all face these sorts of moments in our lives when something falls apart, when something crumbles, or something in our life dies. And we have these experiences when we must decide whether we're going to give up hope. We must decide whether we're going to surrender. Those were the dilemmas facing the followers of Jesus. These were the dilemmas facing Safe Passage. And these are the dilemmas that each of us face in our individual lives. Earlier this year, I took Philip, my 3.5-year-old son, down to Medieval Times in Orlando. Medieval Times, if you haven't been there, is a giant stadium that you go into, and it's like going back into medieval times. They have falconers there, and they have falcons fly around the stadium, and you eat dinner with your hands, the most fun thing in the world for a 3-year-old. They have knights who put on armor, and they fight each other with swords, and they ride horseback and joust one another. It was just like being in the real medieval times, like being one of the knights of the round table, except for one fact. And that is, historians tell us that knights almost never actually dressed the way we think they dressed. They almost never wear the armor we envision them wearing. And that's because they couldn't really move around in it. It didn't really work in battle. Shortly after this sort of armor was created, it was relegated to celebrations and official functions. As a child, I remember having this idea that if a knight put on his armor, he must have been invincible. Cover yourself in armor, put on the helmet, lower your visor, and nothing can ever hurt you, I thought. The reality, however, is very different. And one of the challenges that so many of us face when the rug is pulled out from underneath us is we may have this temptation to put on our armor, to put on our helmet, to lower our visor, and to cut ourselves off from the rest of the world. When things go wrong in your life, are you tempted to cut yourself off, to not let anyone close, to refuse to be vulnerable? This may seem like a solution, but like the knights of the Middle Ages, we will eventually be forced to learn that this is a solution that doesn't actually work. So here's my question. When has the rug been pulled out from underneath you? Have you ever been betrayed? Have you ever been abandoned? Have you ever felt like your whole life was falling apart? Because the reality is that life happens. Things go terribly wrong. Cancer or termination or divorce or diagnoses or death. The question isn't whether things will go wrong in our lives, but how we will respond. Will we close ranks? Will we circle the wagons? Will we refuse to make ourselves ever vulnerable again? Think about the disciples. They could have done just that. The disciples had seen Jesus' miracles of healing. They had heard his lessons of love and forgiveness. They'd eaten with him after the resurrection, and then they'd seen this glorious sight at the ascension, which we remembered this week, when Jesus ascended to the Father, ascended to heaven. And at this point, the disciples, who had been betrayed, could have decided to form their own little monastery and cloister and cut off themselves from the rest of the world. But if they had, God's promise to redeem the world through the message of Jesus would never have worked out. If they had God's plans to make the world a better place through the ministry of the church, never would have taken hold. The disciples, I imagine, must have been tempted to build walls around themselves, to protect themselves, to put on this sort of armor, and to refuse to engage with the outside world. After all, the disciples had been terribly hurt and betrayed by Judas, by one of their friends. But in the passage we read today from Acts, we discover that Peter knew that God was not calling these disciples to become more insular. Instead, God was calling them to further expand the circle. Peter understood this call to bring new people into the fold, even when this decision entailed risk. So Peter explained that they would replace Judas. They would expand the circle. They chose to be vulnerable, to go back into the fray, to put their lives at risk, frankly, even to put their lives in danger. So they prayed, and they cast lots, and they invited Matthias to join them as one of the 12. They chose to be vulnerable. In Guatemala City, in the wake of Hanley's death, Safe Passage was in crisis. Could it go on? Was there a future? Frankly, was it even worth trying? In one moment, its visionary, its founder, its greatest fundraiser, its greatest leader was gone. Safe Passage probably could have closed its doors and celebrated all the good work they'd done. But the leaders decided not to, because there was still more that they could do. Safe Passage found new leaders. They recruited new volunteers. They refined and expanded their programs. And from all around the world, donors gave more to Safe Passage than ever before. Former First Lady Laura Bush flew down to Guatemala and spent some time with this program. And Safe Passage began to find new power, new energy, unlike ever before. Just a few weeks ago, I went back to Guatemala City with a group of about a dozen people, mostly from this cathedral. The program is stronger than I've ever seen it. This program has built new buildings. Since I was last there, they've built a whole new campus for the youngest children, for preschool children. And they're now not just a half-day program. They are operating a fully accredited school. They chose to be vulnerable. The Bible, you see, is filled with stories that call us to take steps that will lead us to vulnerability, that will lead us outside our comfort zones. Think about the prodigal son, who, after he squandered his inheritance, didn't continue living with the pigs. He didn't continue living in a dump. He took a risk, he became vulnerable, and returned home, not knowing if his father would accept him. Or think about this story from the perspective of the father, who welcomed his son, who celebrated his return, and who made himself vulnerable, not knowing if the son would squander this opportunity again. No one, you see, makes a difference in the world by playing it safe. What would have happened to the church if the disciples had decided to not bring anyone new into the fold, to not make themselves vulnerable to the possibility of betrayal again? What would have happened if Safe Passage had decided to celebrate what it had done and then simply close its doors? How would that have impacted the hundreds and thousands of children that have been touched by this program since Hanley died? You see, people only make a difference in the lives of the world or in the lives of their community or in the lives of others if they are vulnerable, if they take off their armor, if they take risks. And this is true of each of us. we can only really make a difference in the world or in our community or in the lives of those sitting around us in this church if we take a risk, if we give a little more than we think we can afford, if we take off our armor, if we practice vulnerability, even knowing that that entails risk. After all, when the disciples chose vulnerability, it changed the world. And that is what we are called to do also. Amen.